the Republicans to wake up is... The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to do it live!
Now, from the Left Coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Hey, thanks for downloading the very latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com. Today, Brad Friedman will join me from bradblog.com, the leading journalist working on election integrity issues in this country. And we're going to focus on the Supreme Court ruling that upheld the Independent Redistricting Commission in Arizona. But Brad will point out some of the flaws of that commission, and I'm going to compare it to the Citizens Redistricting Commission that we have here in California. That's all straight ahead. I think you'll find it interesting, and it ties into the future of democracy in this country, such as it is. Every day, I like to thank the people who support my work with your subscriptions to the Peter B. Collins podcast. There are many who are called, and some are chosen. For example, I want to thank Cameron Troxell, a longtime subscriber, along with Marianne Razzo and Liz Kaiser. Liz just renewed her annual subscription. And then there's Multitask Man. I don't know his true identity, but every month there's $5 there from MTM, and I am very grateful. I'd like you to join their ranks. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. You click on the link under my picture on the homepage, and that takes you to the next page where you can choose whatever level's comfortable, $5, $10, $20 a month, or our best deal, the $50 annual subscription. You can also make a one-time contribution via PayPal. New annual subscribers anywhere in the world earn a bonus gift, the ebook edition of Pepe Escobar's latest called Empire of Chaos. Today, Brad Friedman returns to the Peter B. Collins podcast. He is the citizen journalist and editor, publisher, chief bottle washer at bradblog.com. And he's got a podcast you need to know about.
People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
And I, boy, and I, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me and I'll set you free.
Vote for me and I'll set you free. Elections are a crucial part of democracy, and in this country, our elections are manipulated by big money, by rules that favor the two parties and established incumbent candidates, by gerrymandering, and other ways that the system is gamed, including those pesky electronic voting machines that Brad Friedman is so fond of. Brad, thanks for being with us again today.
Good to be back, Peter. How are you, sir?
I'm holding up pretty well. How's Mr. Election Protection?
Well, I've given up. I can't protect them anymore. It's over. You people are all on your own. I warned you. I did my best. But what can we do at this point? What can we do? Actually, down here in Los Angeles, where I'm from, and where you would think they would know better, we're about to turn over the largest voting jurisdiction in the country to 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems here in my hometown in 2015, Peter B.
Well, it won't have any impact because you only have 18% turnout in Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's true. It does. It doesn't matter anyway. Nobody will. Nobody will notice. Although they're going to claim, they are claiming, by the way, that this isn't like your grandfather's touchscreen. This one actually prints out a paper ballot, which will then be scanned or counted by another method. So it's not like those old direct recording electronic devices, those DREs that you and I spent so many years exposing to be complete and utter crap.
Yeah.
But this is a crap of a new type, actually, because the fact of the matter is, if it's not a hand-marked paper ballot, there's no way to know that it actually reflects the voter intent. And in this case, it's a touchscreen system that prints out a piece of paper with your vote on it.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows if it's printing out your vote or not?
Yeah. Now, it is amazing. We've come a long way, baby, from the stolen election of 2000. You and I went into great depth to cover the stolen election in Ohio in 2004. And because, Democrats seem to have gotten some of what they've wanted from elections, like two terms for Obama, the pressure to really scrutinize our electoral process, the system, the legal undergirding of it, gets very little push from the Democratic side. They pay lip service to trying to fix the part of the Voting Rights Act that was eviscerated by the Supreme Court. But the bottom line is I see a lot more press release than I do action in Congress to really make our system work properly.
Well, you're right. There's sort of two answers that I have to that. One, they have never given a damn about the election, the voting systems, the voting mm-hmm. machines. They, the only times that a Democrat gives a damn about an electronic voting system is when they found out that they got screwed by it. Other than that, they still really don't pay attention to it. They don't, whether it's because they don't understand it, whether they think, oh, no one would go to the effort to hack a voting system to change an election. I don't know. I can't explain that. On the other side of the equation, when it comes to the front-end stuff, the access to voting systems,
mm-hmm.
or the access to the polling place, I should say, they are pretty good. And, Eric Holder, in the much later part of his tenure at the Department of Justice, finally began to realize that we had a problem here after the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act, and they actually started bringing some cases against these voter suppression laws that Republicans were putting in all over the country. But it took them, the cases they filed could have been filed years and years ago.
Right.
And they didn't. And so, I think once the Voting Rights Act got gutted, they really finally got scared on that front, and they started taking some action legally. But as far as, in Congress, there are bills that have been introduced, but I hate to say it, the fact of the matter is the Democrats don't run the House or the Senate, so
mm-hmm.
all they can do is sort of introduce them, raise money on them, let people know about them, but, they can't actually get them passed. And there have been bipartisan bills, too, that they were able to, for example, with James Sensenbrenner to try to fix mm-hmm. the Voting Rights Act. But the Republicans have absolutely no interest in fixing the Voting Rights Act. They are perfectly happy with voter suppression, and they'll continue to try to do more and more as long as they can get away with it.
Yes, they will. Well, Brad, I asked you today to comment on the Supreme Court decision that was published on Monday, June 29, about redistricting in Arizona. And I want to go into some detail about that in a moment. But first, I want to share with my listeners the expansion of your media empire, because you're now doing a podcast, a broadcast, every day. You still do your great work on the blog. Your broadcast airs on a Los Angeles radio station, KPFK, every Wednesday. And you're all over the web, even in more places than I am. So I'm very pleased to see that you have continued to do your work, and also that you are expanding your distribution to reach more people.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I should also note, by the way, you were the first guy kind enough to allow me to guest host a radio program way, way, way back when.
Oh, and I really regret that.
You should. Because I ruined your show, ruined my show, I thank you for that and having the trust in me to allow me to do that. And yeah, I've always enjoyed doing radio, doing your show for years and years, not just as a guest host, but as a weekly guest.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's nice to get to raise some holy hell every day of the week. I see why you like it so much.
It's better than going to a therapist, because then you have to pay. to get somebody to listen to you.
That's true. Oh, believe me, as you know, we pay and pay to do this kind of work. So.
Yes, we do.
But thank you.
All right. So, first of all, just to set the stage here, Arizona's voters passed an initiative, I believe, in the year 2000 that structured the commission, the Independent Redistricting Commission, that took away from the state legislature the duties to choose the districts and, in effect, in the past and in other states, what we call gerrymandering, where the elected officials get to choose their voters by drawing the districts that are most favorable to them. And so in Arizona, they were trying to clean up the swamp a little bit, and through a citizen effort, this initiative was passed. And we'll get into some of the potential weaknesses in the structure of the Arizona Commission. But first and foremost, Republican leaders in Arizona challenged that voter initiative, and it reached the Supreme Court the other day. And I was pleasantly surprised to see that the court upheld the right of the voters to create this commission, even though the Arizona Constitution seemed to exclusively give those powers to the legislature. And in the snarky byplay between justices, we see that that language and the interpretation of it is at the core of this case.
Well, it's actually not the the state constitution as much as it is the U.S. Constitution.
Oh, okay.
And that's why this case was actually so important, because, the U.S. Constitution, the Elections Clause, states that states may set the times, places, and manner of holding elections for representatives, and that that shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof.
Okay.
And so that was the argument that was being made here by the Arizona legislature. Never mind that, you're right, citizens turned out in 2000 to come up with, to pass this referendum, the people's referendum, to create a so-called, and we'll just say so-called, independent redistricting commission to take it out of the hands of the legislature. And this had been done in 2000, and so it was used to do the redistricting after that census year, and then again after the 2010 census year. And, nobody had a problem with it other than those Republicans who now run Arizona and who wanted to take that power back and claimed that the U.S. Constitution says it must be the legislature thereof, and therefore citizens choosing to have an independent commission do it would simply not do. That would be unconstitutional, as the Arizona Republicans had pretended.
Mm-hmm. And so the Republicans on the Supreme Court, led by the Chief Justice John Roberts and trailed by the smack deliverer Justice Scalia, they took the position that the language was clear and that only the legislature could achieve this. But in the majority opinion written by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she said that the legislature encompasses the people's legislative power operating through the initiative process. And what's your own opinion about that, Brad? Do you think that is stretching the interpretation of the terminology here, or do you think it's consistent with the intent that, voters have legislative power through the initiative?
Well, Ginsburg actually made a really compelling case that, in fact, the founders, she went back to dictionary definitions from the founding era and found that, legislature is the power that makes laws. It's not specifically meant as the legislative branch of government. This was the case that she made, that that whoever has the authority of making laws, and since the Arizona Constitution has said that anything that the legislature can make, any law that the legislature can create, so can the people via referendum. So the people have that same legislative power. that's the case that she made. It was a compelling case, and it seems to me that she's got it absolutely right, to be frank. But, you know, we're into this era now on the Supreme Court where this textualism, where, you know, every single word, we're only going to take words for their meaning that they, you know, the plain meaning of any word. And, you know, because it says that this is the legislature gets to decide, then that's it. Legislature means legislature. Never mind what legislature actually meant during the founding era. So that's what the case that the Republican appointee, the right-wingers on the Supreme Court were trying to make. Hey, legislature means legislature. We don't have the power to look up any dictionaries from the time. That would be jiggery-pokery. So, pure applesauce. So, that's what they... That was the case that they made, the Republicans made. Fortunately, there were more people of common sense who said, yeah, no, that's not exactly what it means, that if the people are allowed by the legislature to make laws, then they also count as the legislature. And so this is really important, above and beyond Arizona. Because, you know, there are a lot of, for example, these photo ID restriction bills that Republicans are trying to push all over the country. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of those laws have been overturned thanks to state constitutions in which the people have decided through referendum what the requirements are for voters, right? So, you know, they have to be 18, they have to be a resident of the state, and that's it. And a lot of that happened via, voter referendum. And mm-hmm. had the Arizona Republicans been successful in saying, no, no, if the legislature, if it's not an election-related law created by the legislature, it is not valid, man, you would have seen in state after state all kinds of problems as all kinds of election laws were tossed out the window because they were not created specifically by the legislature.
And, Brad, I will say that the vituperative and colorful linguist, Justice Scalia, is at least consistent. And here's a quote from his dissent. He had noted that his inkling would have been to dismiss the case, claiming that the state legislature lacked standing to sue. He went on, in the present case, however, the majority's resolution of the merits question, parentheses, legislature means the people, is so outrageously wrong, so utterly devoid of textual or historic support, so flatly in contradiction of prior Supreme Court cases, so obviously the willful product of hostility to districting by state legislatures, that I cannot avoid adding my vote to the devastating dissent of the Chief Justice. Now, despite all of what he said there, the odd man out, in my view, is Chief Justice Roberts. Because he stretched language to cover the poor drafting in the Affordable Care Act in the decision that they released last Thursday. And at least in that case, once again, Scalia is consistent in insisting on his literal and historic interpretation of language. I think Chief Justice Roberts ends up looking like a kind of untethered opportunist.
Well, you're right. In one case, Roberts is basically saying we must consider the context of these words in the Affordable Care Act case last week, and then in this case, he's just outraged mm-hmm. that Ginsburg would bother to look at the actual context of the words that were used in the by the founders in the initial drafting of the Constitution. So he is completely contradicting himself. You're absolutely right. But as far as saying that Scalia is consistent. Well, to use a Scalia-ism, that, Peter B., is complete gobbledygook. He is absolutely not consistent, because when he struck down the Voting Rights Act, the heart of the Voting Rights Act back in, two years ago now, right?
Right,
summer
years.
Of 2013,
mm-hmm.
He went on and on, about how this is outrageous, how it's an entitlement, how it's this and that, and basically what he did in gutting that the Voting Rights Act was he completely undermined Congress. Now, if you read the 15th Amendment, which talks about you can't bar people from voting based on race, creed, previous condition of certitude. That's the first sentence. The second sentence is, this shall be enforced by Congress. Well, Congress, in 2013, went to great... I'm sorry, in 2006, went to great lengths to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act.
Right.
The Voting Rights Act was meant to, you know, enforce the 15th Amendment. They went to great lengths. They spent months and months. They had hearings, including Republicans. I mentioned James Sensenbrenner before. They had 15, 20,000 pages of documents. The Voting Rights Act was reauthorized for 25 years, 98 to nothing in the Senate, almost unanimous in the House as well. President George W. Bush signed it, but it was the Congress actually doing their job as literally prescribed in the U.S. Congress. And then this activist judge, Justice Scalia, was legislating from the bench by fiat, saying that the judicial, Supreme Court could overrule what the Congress did, despite the fact that on this case, very specifically, it is supposed to be the Congress that enforces the 15th Amendment. So he completely undermined it. So pardon me, but to hear him, you know, later on talk about activist jurists and, you know, separations of power is absolute complete BS. Pure applesauce on the part of Antonin Scalia.
Well, I'm going to yield to your point, and I should have amended my remark to say he's been extremely consistent during the past week.
Exactly. Over the past 48 hours.
Because as you're talking about the Voting Rights Act, I'm thinking about Citizens United and
yep.
how Scalia, together with Roberts, basically rewrote the case before them in order to set the precedent and create this illusion of corporate personhood. So
yep.
you win this particular argument, Mr. Friedman.
Well, he is one of the most overrated jurists in the history of the Supreme Court, as far as I'm concerned. All the people out there who think he's so smart, think he's so learned in the law, bullshit. I think I can say that on your show, right?
Yes, you can. And that's why he sits next to Clarence Thomas most of the time.
Yeah, it makes him look smarter. But no, there's nothing impressive about Scalia. He will just make up any kind of shit he wants to make whatever case he wants to make.
So I want to talk about something that I learned from the broadcast and your interview with Ted Downing. Ted mm-hmm. used to serve in the Arizona legislature as a Democrat. He is now an independent. And he made a number of powerful points about the weakness of the structure of the Arizona Commission. So what I'd like to do is just to briefly define how Arizona operates. And then in front of me, I have a cheat sheet on how the California Citizens Redistricting Commission is set up. And I'd like to compare those a little bit because it's interesting because both systems have the net effect of sharply limiting the potential of third parties or independent candidates not aligned with the two major parties to actually win elections under these systems. They arrive at the same result by different and relatively circuitous routes. But I think it's interesting because as you were discussing with Downing in a very good exchange, the net effect of this ruling is that voters do have this authority, and therefore voters can improve on both the Arizona Commission and the California Commission if we can properly educate people and move them to an initiative and then actually voting for it. So let's talk about how the commissioners are chosen in Arizona, Brad.
Yeah, well, in very basic terms, in Arizona, the way it works is that Republicans, it's a five-person commission that does all of the redistricting, and it's called the Independent Redistricting Commission. But this independent five-person commission has two members that are appointed by Republican legislators, two members that are appointed by Democratic legislators, and then those four appointees choose the fifth person that will be on the commission. And I guess that's the tiebreaker. That fifth person, he's supposed to be, he or she, supposed to be independent or bipartisan or whatever it is that those four decide. But what you end up with, of course, is a five-person commission that is, you know, heavily weighted towards the establishment Republicans and the establishment Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not quite as independent as the name may make it sound. And Downing, the point that he was trying to make, and he's a former Democrat, now he's an independent, and he's a great election integrity guy, by the way. He headed the state's election integrity committee, the first one commission, I think the first one of any state in the country. But, you know, he's basically saying the commission is rigged on behalf of the two parties, Republican and Democrat. And I think he's right. And the squabble that I had with him was that, yes, that is true. But at least because of the Supreme Court ruling that the people may do this via referendum, at least we can now, you know, fight to make a better commission or a better plan.
And in practice, does Downing believe that these two Democrats and two Republicans have chosen a member who is supposed to represent independents, but in fact is sympathetic to the two-party dominance?
Yeah, that seemed to be what he was what he was suggesting. In other words, you know, it's going to be somebody who, for whatever reason, both those two Republicans and those two Democrats are fine with. And you know, this is we're talking billions of dollars is, you know, related to redistricting and so forth. So this matters. This is important, and it's important to those Republicans and those Democrats to make sure they get someone that they are happy with. There's nobody out there looking out for the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, you know, just complete independence entirely. There's nobody really looking out for those interests, though. This commission is still looking out for the two-party duopoly.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that now in our minds, let me describe for you the slightly more convoluted system here in California. They begin by allowing citizens to volunteer to serve on this commission, and you apply to the state auditor, and they cull through there and select a pool, and the criteria there is not completely clear. I want to be clear about that. But from the volunteers, they review applications, conduct interviews, and then they select a pool of 20 Democrats, 20 Republicans, and 20 applicants from people who in California were called no party preference, NPP. The panel then submits that list of the 60 most qualified candidates to the legislature. Then the leaders of both parties reduce those pools. They basically get to, like a jury pool, knock out 8 of the 20 members in each of those pools. Then they submit the list of applicants remaining in the pool to the state auditor, who randomly draws 3 Democrats, 3 Republicans, and 2 independents, declined states. And then those first 8 commissioners select the remaining 6 commissioners for the total panel. So it's quite a little game that is played. You can see that at each stage here, there is the ability of the elected leaders, the incumbents, the party leaders, to knock out people who might be known to be, you know, opponents of two-party dominance in state politics. But because the original pool is based on citizens who volunteer, and the culling of the pool has one round of clear partisan play, and then they randomly draw the first group, who then get to select their colleagues. Like Arizona, I'm a little uncomfortable with the idea that commissioners get to select additional members of the commission. But that is how it works here in California.
Well, it sounds like at least, you know, there is more randomness to it. It sounds like instead of, you know, directly appointing who is going to do this, the effort, I'm sure, is in place to try to influence, to try to weight it any way they can, whether it's towards Republicans or Democrats. And remember, when you've got, how did you describe it, citizens volunteering to be on it?
Right.
These are not just people walking off the street, you know, hearing, oh, what, I could be on the redistricting commission? I'm sure they are ringers. And I, you know, the same thing Ted Downing suggested was the case in Arizona when it comes to that independent, that one independent slot. He says in order to be appointed, you have to be a non-Republican, a non-Democrat for 3 years. So he says there are all kinds of party apparatchiks who are basically dropping their party label in hopes of getting onto that committee later. So I find it hard to believe that it's, you know, random citizens walking in and volunteering to be on this commission. On the other hand, you got to do it somehow, right?
Yeah, right. And Brad, here is the next step, because when they sit down following the census and try to draw the new lines for districts for the state assembly, the state senate, and the House of Representatives, they are constrained by six criteria that are rank ordered. So they have to take these and apply them in this order. First, population equality. That's pretty understandable. Second, compliance with the Federal Voting Rights Act. Third, geographic contiguity. This is to try to prevent these Rorschach blots, or whatever you call them, these bizarre districts that we've seen on maps all over the country and that we used to have here in California. Then geographic integrity, trying to keep cities, counties, and neighborhoods in the same district. Geographic compactness. And finally, nesting, and that's the mechanics of creating a state senate seat that has two assembly districts built into the same geography. So that gives people a quick sense of the criteria that are used. And I have to say that I watched the work of this new commission as it took the 2010 census and redrew the districts in California for the 2012 primaries. And in disclosure, I was working for a candidate who was trying to clear the primary in the open district here in the northern part of California. It runs from the Golden Gate Bridge all the way to the Oregon border as it was redrawn by this commission. So I attended some of their hearings, and I offered some testimony that they actually seemed to listen to, not just me, but others, about what we wanted to see. We didn't want to be part of San Francisco. We wanted a separate district, and they did acknowledge that, and they adhered to it. So in general, I'm happy with the way the process is working, and we have seen competitive districts show up in both races for the state legislature and for the House that didn't occur before. But do we have a wide-open process? Do we have a process that doesn't favor the two parties? And I have to conclude that that is not the case. But in California, the squeeze on independents and third parties is not a result of the redistricting commission and the initiative that created it. It is a separate voter initiative that created the top two primary. And that top two system went into effect at the same time in 2012 with the new redistricting scheme. And what we have seen is that zero Greens, to my knowledge, have been elected in California since the new system went into play. And it's because they get on the ballot in the primary, but either two Democrats, two Republicans, or a Democrat and Republican typically surface in the top two positions to face off in the general election. And no third parties are permitted to get on the ballot in the general election separately. So by eliminating party primaries for the big parties, we also had the effect, I think unintended and at least ill-advised, of restricting the ability of voters to select someone who isn't a Democrat or Republican to represent them.
You said you think it was unintended. I'm not so sure I agree with you. I don't know how you can, you know, look at that scheme when they came up with this top two primary and not say, okay, well, what we're going to end up with here is a Republican and, well, either a Republican and a Democrat, or two Republicans or two Democrats. But we're not going to get a third party in there in most cases. So, no, I don't think it was unintended at all. I think it was very much meant to shore up the duopoly.
Well, you are probably right about that. The top two law was written by Common Cause and it was embraced early by Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was governor. And I don't think of Common Cause as trying to protect the two-party system, but they may have seen it as the way to get the top two law enacted. And I'm not really sure what went on in the drafting of that bill.
Well, you know, when it comes to that top two primary, it's very hard to defeat that. But on the other things that we were talking about, the redistricting and so forth, and how do you overcome the lock that the two major parties have on our elections, you know, I don't know if structurally, I don't think it's real easy to do structurally. I think that first it's going to require the people stepping up and voting for independent candidates or for third-party candidates and getting this idea out of their stupid heads that they get some kind of prize when they pick the winner. This idea that, oh, I don't want to waste my vote, that has driven me, and you probably recall, because I think we've talked about it for years, drives me crazy. It is not a wasted vote to vote for the person who you think would best serve the people. So I think it's really a matter of the people stepping up. I mean, for those who are sitting back and saying, gosh, I wish these Republicans and Democrats who have created this system would change it so it doesn't so much benefit Republicans and Democrats, well, they're not going to do that. You know, I think it really is up to the people, and whether it's done by referendum or whether it's just done by voting for independent candidates, I think we need to figure it out. Ain't nobody going to do it for us, I'm afraid.
Yeah, you're definitely correct about that. And again, what I see as the best aspect of this Supreme Court ruling is that it has clearly established, over the objections of Scalia and Roberts, that voters have the right to change these processes and to take away from a legislature the role in devising these districts and essentially selecting their voters.
And that's why this was just a huge decision. And I don't think people really understand it when they hear it. They think, oh, it's, you know, allowed the Arizona thing to move forward. They also don't understand that I think Arizona and California are currently the only ones to have this type of quote-unquote independent redistricting commission. So a lot of other states could certainly benefit from that, but benefit from the larger picture, from the idea of the people's referendum, that we actually can change laws, that we actually can change things for the better. And remember, that whole, you know, the referendum movement entirely began in the early part of the 20th century, and they talk about that in the Supreme Court decision.
Mm-hmm.
That was the previous progressive age that said, yeah, the people can have, you know, some form of direct democracy. And here we are over 100 years later fighting to preserve that first progressive age. And I would say, and I've been arguing on the broadcast now for some time, that we are on the cusp of another progressive age. And I know it's not, popular to not be outraged in talk radio that everything is a disaster. But actually, I think everything is not a disaster. I think that in many cases and many places, we are finally now seeing this country move forward, too slow to be sure, but finally moving forward in a progressive direction. So as bad as things are in many cases and in many ways, I think I'm happy to say we might finally be righting this country after many decades of the wrong direction.
Well, and what is encouraging is that we've seen the incredible strides that marriage equality as an issue made in just a 10-year period. And it was driven by grassroots action and by real people pushing for change. And, I'm not making a direct comparison here because the politics get more complicated. A lot of people, you know, aren't as motivated to try to fix the electoral process as they were to achieve important rights for non-straight people. Still, I think that, you know, when we see what is there for us and the power that we do have, There are appropriate ways for us to use it. And here in California, I'd like to see us fix the top two law through a subsequent voter initiative as a way of opening it up to third party and independent candidates who would have a realistic chance of winning election, not just a show of being able to get on the primary ballot where you are squished by the power of big money and the big political parties.
Well, let's do it. I've always been about, as you know, not necessarily about parties, but about democracy and about the right of the people, whether the Republican, Democrat, or any of the third parties or independent, to be able to exercise democracy. And I think we're seeing that more and more. We're seeing, you had mentioned, what happened with marriage equality. I mean, just last week alone, if you look at what happened, on the Confederate flag, you look at what happened on Obamacare, and as much of a problem as I suspect you and I have with Obamacare, seeing 12 million, 20 million, whatever it is, more people now being able to have at least a shotgun's chance in hell of having health care, That's a progressive direction. So we're moving in a progressive direction on a lot of these things, and thank you for mentioning that the people can change their government through the referendum process and, of course, through voting. And that's something that, for years, people have heard me talk on your show and elsewhere about problems with the electoral system, problems with the voting machines. And some of them had said, well, why bother to vote? Why bother, the whole system is rigged. It is rigged. There are a lot of places where it is rigged. But if you don't bother to do anything about it, if you don't bother to vote, and again, don't vote for the two big parties, vote for whoever you damn well please. But when you don't show up, when you don't, even show up to play, the bad guys don't have to steal your vote. You are turning over your democracy, your representative democracy, in Congress or in the state house, your direct democracy via referendum. You're turning that over to the bad guys. So, yeah, a lot of things suck, but don't give up hope and don't give up fighting for your democracy, whatever that might mean to you, whatever party you may or may not be aligned with.
Brad Friedman, thanks for the inspiration, and thanks for the information.
My pleasure. Thanks for talking. It's been a long time since we got to chat. It's always great to talk to you, my friend.
Brad Friedman, visit bradblog.com or else. Thanks for joining me today, and you're welcome to send me your comments and feedback, peter@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until